In a previous episode, we looked at the judge Gideon. His son Abimelech was not selected by God to be a judge of Israel. Instead, Abimelech sought to make himself a king. To learn more, join me for today's episode of All Things Apostolic. The story of Abimelech is detailed in the book of Judges, chapter 9. Verse 1 says that Abimelech was the son of Jerubbaal. Gideon was called Jerubbaal by his father after Gideon destroyed his father's altar of Baal. Jerubbaal probably means "let Baal contend," because Gideon's father was saying that Baal would contend with Gideon about the altar, as opposed to letting the townspeople kill him for destroying the altar. Gideon judged Israel for 40 years and brought peace to the land. He also refused to be made king over Israel, but in the end, he acted somewhat like a typical Near Eastern king, including the fact that he had many wives and fathered 70 sons, and one of his sons from a concubine was named Abimelech, which means "my father is king." Now, Abimelech's mother was from Shechem. Shechem was an ancient biblical city located in central Israel, southeast of Samaria. It was approximately 40 miles north of Jerusalem. Shechem was the place where Abraham stopped at the Tree of Moreh and received God's promise of land. Both Abram and Jacob built altars to God at Shechem. It was also the place where Jacob's daughter Dinah was raped, and two of her brothers avenged her by slaughtering the men of the city. Shechem was located between Mount Ebal and Mount Gerizim. It was important because of its position in an east-west pass between the two mountains. Before entering Canaan, Moses had instructed Israel to have a renewal of the covenant. Six tribes would stand on Mount Gerizim to bless the people, and six tribes would stand on Mount Ebal to curse. The Levites would stand between them in the valley and speak 12 curses, and to each curse the people would reply, "Amen." After the Battle of Ai, Joshua brought the Israelites to this spot, and they did just as Moses had commanded. Shechem was part of the Promised Land, and it served as a Levitical city of refuge. It's where Joseph's remains were buried. It was there that an aged Joshua gathered the Israelites to beg them to follow God. In the last chapter of the book of Joshua, the old leader called all of the tribes of Israel to Shechem to renew their covenant. Joshua set a great stone called the Sacred Pillar beneath a sacred oak to serve as a witness of the covenant. That sacred oak and pillar reappear in Judges chapter 9, and we'll talk about that more in a moment. But the main point is that there was a lot of history in this city. Abimelech went to Shechem and communed with his mother's brethren and all the family of the house of his mother's father. Since Abimelech was the son of a Shechemite concubine, he was technically an illegitimate son. Abimelech asked his extended family whether they would prefer to have all of Jerubbaal's sons, a total of 70, reign over them, or just one. And he reminded them that he was their bone and flesh. In the hearing of the men of Shechem, his brethren declared that they would follow Abimelech. Then they gave him 70 pieces of silver, which would have been shekels, out of the temple of Baal-berith. And with the money, Abimelech hired basically a mercenary army. I want to stop and make a few points here. First, the temple of Baal-berith stood on the Acropolis of the city. Baal-berith means Baal of the Covenant. The name could have been referring to Baal, the Canaanite storm god and the god of fertility, or it could have been a name specific to a city god of Shechem. Or it could have been a title because of some syncretistic blend of the worship of Yahweh with the pagan worship of Baal. Second, a town of Shechem size would have had potentially several hundred people eligible to be in the army. but they probably would have been uncomfortable with the task of execution. So Abimelech hired a group to help him do his dirty work. Third, it's interesting that the temple treasury paid out 70 shekels for the 70 lives of Gideon's sons. Now, it wasn't unusual for a temple to provide financial backing for military activity if the deity of that temple supposedly supported it. But 70 shekels for 70 lives, that's just one shekel apiece. Compare this with the 50 shekel per male ransom price in Leviticus 27, or the typical 20 shekels for a slave. To have only paid one shekel apiece is an indication of how little the lives of the sons of Gideon were valued. So the Shechemites sided with Abimelech and colluded to make Abimelech their ruler. Abimelech and his men went to his father's house at Ophrah and slew Gideon's other sons upon one stone. Now, this is very interesting because the fact that they were all murdered on one stone suggests that it may have been some type of ritual execution. Sacrifices usually took place on an altar, but a large stone was at times used for a makeshift altar. They may have been killed one at a time on some type of sacrificial altar. But it's not fully clear because although it was common in the ancient Near East to execute competitors for the throne, there are no known instances of ritual execution or human sacrifice of rivals. So exactly why Abimelech killed them in this manner isn't fully understood. Unbeknownst to Abimelech, the youngest son, Jotham, escaped. Then the men of Shechem gathered together and made Abimelech king by the plain of the pillar that was in Shechem. This was perhaps the same pillar where Joshua had gathered the tribes previously to renew the covenant. Jotham heard about it, and he went and stood on the top of Mount Gerizim. He yelled out to the men of Shechem to hearken to him so that God would hearken to them. And this appeal sounds similar to the language of the prophets. The natural acoustics of this area would have enabled someone positioned on Mount Gerizim to be heard in Shechem. Then Jotham told a fable. The trees went forth on a time to anoint a king over them, and they said unto the olive tree, "Reign thou over us." But the olive tree said unto them, "Should I leave my fatness, wherewith by me they honor God and man, and go to be promoted over the trees?" And the tree said to the fig tree, "Come thou and reign over us." But the fig tree said unto them, "Should I forsake my sweetness and my good fruit and go to be promoted over the other trees?" Then said the trees unto the vine, "Come thou and reign over us." And the vine said unto them, "Should I leave my wine, which cheereth God and man, and go to be promoted over the trees?" Then said all the trees unto the bramble, "Come thou and reign over us." And the bramble said unto the trees, "If in truth ye anoint me king over you, then come and put your trust in my shadow. And if not, let fire come out of the bramble and devour the cedars of Lebanon." Jotham talked about the olive tree, the fig tree, and the vine, all of which refused to be made king. These were three of the most productive members of the economy. They were important products that were consistently used domestically, and they were also valuable as exports. Therefore, they represented prosperity and also demonstrated that a king was competent. The olive tree, the fig tree, and the vine did not want to give up their calling. They wanted to stay where they were planted and nobly bear fruit for God and man. The type of bramble or a thorn bush or briar is unknown. Jotham may have been referring to a species of buckthorn that creates a large fire when it burns, but many scholars think that he may have been referring to a prickly boxwood, which has very tiny leaves that would not have offered any shade unless someone was in the middle of a thicket of it. which would have been very unpleasant. Unlike the trees and the vine, the briar was excited about this unexpected honor of being asked to be king. The briar, full of thorns and not able to cast much of a shadow, is analogous to a person who is worthless. Jotham told the allegorical story to mock Abimelech's false kingship. Like the olive tree, fig tree, and vine, Gideon was offered the role of king, and though he may have been qualified more than others, he wouldn't do it. On the other hand, Abimelech, like the briar, was worthless and sought after the role with a greedy eagerness and threats. The briar said, "Trust me in my shadow." And the deep irony of those words became realized later. After telling the fable, Jotham pronounced a curse on Abimelech and the Shechemites. "Now, therefore, if ye have done truly and sincerely, in that ye have made Abimelech king, and if ye have dealt well with Jerubbaal and his house, and have done unto him according to the deserving of his hands, for my father fought for you, and adventured his life far, and delivered you out of the hand of Midian, and ye are risen up against my father's house this day, and have slain his sons, 70 persons, upon one stone, and have made Abimelech, the son of his maidservant, king over the men of Shechem, because he is your brother. If ye then have dealt truly and sincerely with Jerubbaal and with his house this day, then rejoice ye in Abimelech, and let him also rejoice in you. But if not, let fire come out from Abimelech and devour the men of Shechem and the house of Milo, and let fire come out from the men of Shechem and from the house of Milo and devour Abimelech." This was a severe indictment in which the great deeds of Gideon were juxtaposed against the bloody deeds of Abimelech. Jotham cursed Shechem, but it's appropriate to think of a curse in this context as a judgment. And in this case, the curse came true. After Abimelech had ruled Israel for 3 years, the King James Version says that God sent an evil spirit between Abimelech and the men of Shechem because the blood of Jerubbaal's sons was on Abimelech and the men of Shechem. Now, I want to pause here for a minute and talk about this verse. The Hebrew word ra is usually translated as evil or wicked or bad, and it often refers to moral or ethical wickedness, but it does have a range of meaning, sometimes referring to things like experiencing misfortune or trouble or distress. So not as evil or bad in a moral sense, but more in a sense of being unfavorable. We recognize that God sends spirits as agents to execute divinely decreed blessings and punishments. In this case, it was a punishment. So it wasn't the spirit itself that was evil or bad, but what the spirit was going to do was considered unpleasant or unfavorable for the recipients. This was God's judgment. And as a result, Abimelech and the men of Shechem would turn against each other. The men of Shechem dealt treacherously with Abimelech by lying in wait for him in the top of the mountains and robbing everyone who came by. Since Shechem was along a trade route, merchant traffic was important for the economy to thrive. By setting robbers in the hills, merchants would stop using Shechem as a travel station, and this would hurt the economy and also deprive Abimelech of the income from tariffs. Then Gaal and his brothers came to Shechem, and the men of the city put their confidence in him. Gaal and Abimelech fought, and Gaal fled. And then Abimelech rose up against the city. He slew the people, and he took the city. When he saw that the people had fled to the tower of Shechem, which was probably the inner part of the temple, then Abimelech and his people set fire to it, killing about 1,000 men and women. Then he tore down the city and sowed it with salt. There are a couple of ideas of why he may have scattered salt. One idea is that salt makes the land infertile. By spreading salt on a conquered city, he could prevent the city from easily rising up again. However, not all salts make a field infertile. And the scripture gives the impression that the salt was scattered not on the fields, but the city. So it's possible that the salt may have been scattered on the city for a symbolic reason. It could have been a ritual for purification or consecration of the city to a deity. Salt also symbolized impurity, so it could have been basically used like a curse that the land would have no progeny. Then Abimelech went to Thebes and besieged it and captured it. Inside the city, all the people locked themselves in a strong tower. Abimelech was going to burn it as he had the temple in Shechem. But when he approached the entrance to the tower, a woman dropped an upper millstone on his head and cracked his skull. Now, it is doubtful that it was the large upper stone of a rotary quern at the mill, which became generally used during the Iron Age, but it was probably a smaller round molar used to grind grain, and it would have weighed probably about 4 or 5 pounds. Abimelech was fatally wounded, but he didn't die immediately, so he had his armor bearer spear him so it wouldn't be said that he was killed by a woman. The chapter concludes by saying that God rendered the wickedness of Abimelech, which he did unto his father in slaying his 70 brethren. And all the evil of the men of Shechem did God render upon their heads, and upon them came the curse of Jotham, the son of Jerubbaal. Now, I love when archaeology supports the Bible, and archaeological evidence corroborates the story of Abimelech and his destruction of Shechem. There appears to be a destruction in the mid-12th century BCE, which fits the general biblical chronology for the period of the Judges. A great fortress temple has been excavated there and has been identified as the temple of this chapter in the Bible. It was huge by Canaanite standards. It is the largest temple found yet in Canaan, measuring 70 feet wide by 86 feet long and 2 stories high. Here the citizens of the city took refuge against Abimelech's attack, and there is evidence that the temple was destroyed by a massive fire, which is consistent with Abimelech setting fire to the tower. In front of the temple is a courtyard with a sacred stone that presently is almost 5 feet wide and 16 and a half inches thick and stands almost 5 feet high, but it was much higher and was broken in antiquity. This sacred stone may be the pillar where the coronation ceremony took place when Abimelech was declared king. Evidence of massive destruction from the time of Abimelech has been found throughout the site, attesting to his razing of the city. The site was apparently abandoned after Abimelech's destruction. But the city's history did not end there. Because of its important geographic location, it quickly became powerful again and was a prominent city during the period of Israel's monarchy. One thing I want to clarify is that nowhere in the Bible is Abimelech called a judge. He was not a judge. In fact, he breaks the type of a judge of Israel because rather than being a deliverer of Israel from an oppressing enemy, he created an internal political issue. And he died as he had lived, by violence. So why did God want the story of Abimelech to be included in the Bible? Besides the obvious answer that it's part of the chronological history of this time period, the story of Abimelech also describes the unsettled, violent state of affairs during this era of the Judges. There were repeated periods of chaos with political fragmentation, infighting, and disunity, and spiritual and moral depravity. Remember that in this period, an overarching theme is that there was no king in Israel. Everyone did as they saw fit in their own eyes. Abimelech attempted to become king of Israel by taking control of Shechem, and he secured his illegitimate rule through violence. He became king by the will of the people and not by the will of God. He was not God's chosen leader. This dark time of Israel's history was another reminder that Israel and the world needed godly leadership, which would eventually come later through the Davidic kingship and ultimately through the kingship of Christ. Thank you for joining me for today's episode of All Things Apostolic. And until next time, take care and God bless.